Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Well, that's Dave Grohl at his finest, singing all about the getting the best of you, and I definitely feel like LeBron James is feeling that all over the world tonight, so we definitely wanted to get back on the air and talk to you guys about how the finals are going. We don't know if we're seeing the last of LeBron in the finals, but it definitely feels that way. So real quick, introduce my co-host, co-pilot, co-star, brother-in-law, whatever you want to call him, Bryant Knox, at Bryant Knox on Twitter, the Bryant Knox. How are you doing tonight, Bryant?
I'm good. I feel like it's been forever since we've chatted.
Way too long, man. I mean, 48 hours? Are you kidding me? This is nuts.
Man, I think it's even been like 49 hours.
It's been at least another 48 hours, but I'm, you know, that's what happens when you let us have a second show in a week. We come out with the crazy dad jokes. It's not good. This is why they don't allow it. But
I mean, I do that every day in my normal life anyway, so it's pretty on brand.
You have to. I'm blanking on the name of the show, but YouTube has a show. They have two comedians running dad jokes at each other, and it's just it's unwatchable, but it's so good. And the Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg one is still my favorite, where they're just saying the worst jokes, and they're just mad at themselves for laughing at them. And that's me every day.
Is it You Laugh, You Lose by chance?
I believe so.
Okay, I sounds know exactly right. What you're talking about.
So good. Not necessarily a play of A-list stars, but there's definitely some good ones in there, regardless of whether you know the comedians or not. It's just really good.
The only reason I know that show is because I think it's like a spinoff of a one-off that one of those, like, you know, kind of not safe for work comedy channels did, where it was like two of the guys from the movie Superbad back and forth. Was like the most inappropriate jokes you can think of, and so this is like a little more of a family-friendly version, if you will,
and probably just as entertaining. Strangely enough, you can't
especially
have fun without the
if you're in
words.
That mindset.
Yeah, you know, you can't always have a boss button. It's not always March Madness. Sometimes you got to actually watch appropriate stuff when you're goofing off at work. It sucks, but it's what must be done if you're adults, and we adult, and we adult hard.
Boss button is a top three invention of all time.
It has to be. Thank you. You know, here, there's a bud for you, boss button guy. Speaking of hitting the panic button, how do you feel about LeBron now? What's your hot take after seeing their disaster of a finish in game three? And now here we are, Warriors are up 3-0. Nobody's come back from that in basketball. We hear you, Boston. We know it can be done, but come on. We don't have the Yankees phoning it in this time. We've got a real opponent. So what do you do? What's your reaction to this, Bryant? When you watched that game, did you feel just kind of like the weight of the world is on LeBron James' shoulders and he just can't handle it anymore?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it comes down to. And it's really to no fault of his own, as we've talked about as recently as a couple days ago. It's not to no fault of his own at all. It has to do with, you know, the fact that his supposed lights out shooters and role players and second banana stars just aren't getting the job done. Now, if you want to say fault here, really, you kind of have to look at the way that he quote-unquote runs the organization and creates his own roster. But that said, this roster had a huge makeover at the trade deadline, so there's really nothing you can say about him orchestrating this particular roster. Right. So, no, I don't think there's anything to do, and I don't think he deserves all that much blame either.
Without giving away too much, do you think he should stay in Cleveland after this? Do you think they could bring another piece or two in, or do you think he's done there?
I think he's done there. I think really the only player on the market who could get him to stay is Paul George, because, you know, Kevin Durant's not coming.
Right.
Kawhi Leonard is close. I would question how well they would play together, at least at first. And LeBron is getting to a point in his career where he doesn't have the same learning curve that he had even when he came back to Cleveland. So I think a Paul George could get him to stay if, you know, Cleveland's able to swing that deal and prove that that's not the last move. You know, not necessarily bring in a third star, but show a roadmap to continual improvement.
Right.
I think that that could help persuade him, but are very slim because, you know, Paul George is going to have to want to be there as well. And he seems destined for Los Angeles. So it's looking more and more as if LeBron's done.
So they've got Rodney Hood now, which I guess is a good thing. There's been some jokes coming up, popping over the interwebs today about, you know, put a banner up about you got quality minutes out of Rodney Hood in a playoff game. So kudos to them. But what did you see in game three that maybe scared you the most about whether Cleveland can even win game four or not?
Well, the fact that we are praising Rodney Hood so much, and I don't mean to turn him into a joke. He's a very serviceable NBA player when he's playing well. But the fact that we're looking at this going, wow, they got 15 points on 7 of 11 shooting from Rodney Hood off the bench. They've like, no, that's not going to be enough. So
that's what kids dream about when they're kids, though, Bryant. They want to be serviceable players in the NBA.
I mean, that's what I dreamed about for sure. I wanted to be the Kenny Anderson of the NBA for sure.
Brian Scalabrine all the way. That's the dream.
Was he the Red Mamba or the White Mamba?
He's the White Mamba.
Or is he both?
There is no Red Mamba.
White Mamba, okay.
He probably should have been the Red Mamba, but, you know, I think White Mamba is a little more fitting for him.
That's probably true.
So if you're Golden State, are you even taking game four seriously, or do you think this is one where they'll shoot around, they'll play their brand of basketball, but do you really think they'll be at 110%, or are they going to kind of not necessarily phone it in for this one, but let's just say air quotes phone it in and let Cleveland have one and then win it in Oracle in game five on Monday?
I think they're going to take the first half very seriously, and I say that genuinely. I think they're going to come out pedal to the metal. I think that they are going to absolutely put forth 110%, and if they're able to get a big lead going the second half, I think the series is over. Where they maybe become a little content is if it's a closely contested contest in the second half, and maybe they're, you know, going through stretches where they're down by between 5 and 8 points. I think at that point they have to weigh, or they're going to weigh the value of putting forth a ton of effort and maybe not winning, or coasting and going back home. I think that's the scenario that you have to look out for when it comes to them kind of laying off the gas.
Well, and you have Steph Curry went, I believe, 1 for 10 from outside the 3-point line, which is nuts. That's got to be a career worst for him in the NBA Finals, especially after he set the mark in game two for most made in a game with 9. Then he goes on to miss his first 9 of the next game, and he just looked off target all night. But Kevin Durant was absolutely on fire, and I guess that's kind of a fun, not fun segue into a lot of people, including yourself, have been looking at Kevin Durant and kind of wondering what happened, what would have happened if he was in Portland. I believe LeBron had a little bit to share on that. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, freaking LeBron. as soon as game three ended, he does. It's unfortunate for us out here because, you know, in the closing moments of game three, when Kevin Durant had his sort of deja vu moment in Quicken Loans Arena, knocked down a 33-footer to sort of ice the game, you know, a lot of people on Twitter here locally started pointing out that the Blazers could have had Kevin Durant. So, you know, in the wee hours of the morning, I penned a column for OSN that I truly, truly believed, I 100% that Kevin Durant is going to remind the Blazers over and over again what could have been, but that Blazers fans everywhere at this point, 11 years later, just need to let it go because he's too great at his craft and he's too good for the beautiful game of basketball to be so bitter over it. And I 100% believe that. And then hours later, LeBron comes out. They're asking him about the greatness of Kevin Durant. He said everybody knew Kevin Durant was going to be great, even from the day he was drafted. And then he goes on to say, well, except Portland. Sorry, Portland. And I'm sitting there going, you know what? The wound is back open. I'm bitter about it again. And, you know, in Portland's defense, I've got to go here because I swear I'm going to die on this hill, and I don't think I'm totally unjustified in it. Choice at the time. People make so much about Kevin Durant's inability to bench press 185 pounds for even one rep, and I think that's important. But what a lot of people forget is that Greg. What a lot of people forget is that Greg Oden actually also had better 40 times. He had better verticals. He had better sort of. I can't remember exactly what sprinting stats they were, but he had not only the better measurements, but the better.
Were they on one leg?
Tangibles, and at the time, it made total sense. Of course, the revisionist wants to go back and either make excuses or change what happened. But yeah, LeBron took 3 hours of being in total content and then just ripped my heart back out.
Well, I will say that Portland could also go back and if they want to hop in the DeLorean, they could go back and reflip that coin toss that got Houston the number one pick in 1984. They could also go back and draft Jordan to pair him with Drexler and not draft Sam Bowie. I mean, they could make some different choices. You know, one that doesn't come up as much anymore, and I think it's because the Kevin Durant thing overshadowed it, is people were pissed for a long time that the Blazers should have had Chris Paul, because if they had not traded their pick and moved down and then also drafted, I believe, Travis Outlaw, but it might have been Martell Webster or even Quentin Woods. I don't know which of their disastrous draft picks it was.
It was Martell.
Yeah, so they get Martell Webster, and they don't get Deron Williams, and they don't get Chris Paul in one of the most loaded drafts in recent memory. How come that doesn't come up more? Chris Paul is pretty good, if I'm not speaking out of turn there.
Yeah, it came up for a while, but I think that Deron Williams fizzled very quickly. And right. Well, I don't mean quickly or as in early in his career. And then once his downfall started, man, it happened rapidly. And so I think that, yes, of course, Chris Paul is.
But who fizzled faster, Derrick Rose or Deron Williams?
I'm going to say Deron Williams, mostly just because. Well, and this isn't totally fair, but I'm going to say Deron Williams because he ended up playing for some really bad teams, and at that point he was just not relevant, whereas Derrick Rose was on a Knicks team that was at least trying for a while.
Right.
He made the playoffs this year, and it was more significant injuries for Derrick Rose, whereas Deron Williams, yeah, he had some chronic injuries as well, but for the most part he was like a top-tier free agent and then didn't end up on the Mavericks with Dwight Howard. That one year they were trying to get both of them and got neither. It was just kind of really downhill from there. I think that Deron Williams kind of was the higher level Gerald Wallace, where had a good career, whereas Deron Williams was on track to have a great career. And then, boy, once they hit the downfall, it came really quickly.
Right. So I guess in retrospect, we should have done a lot of things differently as a franchise. But, you know, if we had drafted Hakeem Olajuwon and Michael Jordan and Kevin Durant, I guess that'd be pretty cool.
That wouldn't be too bad.
I tried to think of a downside, but there's just not one. I couldn't think of one. Well, here's one. Kevin Durant would not have stayed here. Here's my thought on that. He didn't stay in Oklahoma City, where he went to two conference finals and went to one NBA finals and still left town when he had, for the most of the time, he had James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka amongst a bunch of other talented players and still didn't think it was enough to stick around. And he's from Texas, so you'd think he'd want to stay in Oklahoma City. Instead, he goes to Golden State. Do you think if the roles were reversed and he went to Portland and let's say they get to a conference finals or two and an NBA finals, maybe even win one, do you think he still stays here knowing that he has to defeat Golden State somehow, or does he go join them anyway?
I think there's a very, very good chance he leaves just because he, you know, not to say he took the easy way out. I do not believe that. But he hit a wall, and he wasn't able to get past it. And right. he made the conscious decision for him and his family and his business and his brand to do that. And I think that he alone does not make the Blazers a championship contender, especially early in his career. So he probably hits the same wall. Now, what I will say the big difference is, and why I, as a Trailblazers fan, well, maybe he sticks around, or there's a better chance he sticks around here than OKC, is because the roster is a very different makeup, and he's playing with a couple of humble stars in Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge, as opposed to a very, very abrasive star in Russell Westbrook. And I think that he probably comes into the league, is humbled a little bit being a second option for the first time in his career behind Brandon Roy. And then as Brandon Roy's knees unfortunately deteriorate, over that number one option is still very comfortable playing with LaMarcus, who is going to be an inside out, outside in guy, and not nearly the type of personality that Westbrook is. And so then from there, you can 100% commit yourself to building around Durant, as opposed to an OKC where there was always this question about who's the number one option, who is the face of the franchise. You don't have those things here, which I think at least helps Portland's case.
And now you've most likely got a healthy, younger Wesley Matthews playing alongside Durant when Roy goes down. You've got Aldridge wanting to stick around at least a little bit longer because you've got a really good superstar playing alongside him. And you can probably put Nick Batum on the bench where he probably should have been coming from for a lot of the time, and he was mostly starting because there wasn't a better option in front of him. And now you've got a fresh all-NBA defender coming off the bench when you need him, or worst case, you can move Durant to the four and start Batum alongside him, and now how do you attack that?
Yeah, and Batum found some success as a shooting guard as well. So right. if you wanted to go with a big, long lineup, you know, I don't know who your point guard ends up being in this situation. Maybe Jared Bayless is able to find some success. maybe. I know. I didn't mean that to be a joke, but it pretty much is. Maybe Steve Blake is still around at that point and just is the perfect glue guy at point guard. But then after that, you have a shooting guard of Batum. You have a small forward of Durant. You have a power forward in a long-bodied LaMarcus Aldridge. And then, of course, you're still trying to figure out the center position. But, you know, guys like Joel Prisbilla were around there for a couple more years.
Manilla Gorilla. Maybe he doesn't get hurt.
He is just the perfect brute guy to make up for, or not make up for it, but to complement a just ridiculously lanky 2-4 in your starting lineup.
What if we
that's
don't
a lineup
trade,
that I would love to see.
How about we go back and don't trade Jermaine O'Neal? Can we do that?
You can do that. I know part of the issue, you know, the main reason that they traded Jermaine O'Neal was because they wanted a bigger body to defend Shaq, and that's right. what Dale Davis did when he came in. Obviously, it didn't work
Amongst
out in the big scheme of things. Right. It didn't work out, but that was the purpose there. But the other issue was that the Blazers were actually stacked at that point. And so if you don't trade Jermaine O'Neal, chance he doesn't crack the rotation for a few years, and then his potential and his ceiling just drops completely because he's playing behind someone like Rasheed Wallace, someone like Brian Grant, someone like Kelvin Cato. And I'm not saying those guys have the ceilings, maybe Rasheed, but those guys didn't have the ceilings as Jermaine O'Neal, but they could have definitely stunted his growth. So I think it's tough to say, but man, that's an experiment I would love to see,
right,
is what he would do on that team just a few years later.
Well, you know, we've talked about Jermaine O'Neal now, and he went to the Pacers, I believe, which is where Paul George came from, and that's who we wanted LeBron to pair with, hypothetically. So we've come full circle. We're back to where we started. We're with LeBron now. What does he have to do in this series to get a win, or is that even possible? Do you think he gets a win over the next two games, or do you think the next time we're talking on the air, he's gone home and the finals are over?
I'm very, very tempted to pick Cleveland to win game four, not because of the precedent that last year set, because they needed a desperate 40 points from Kyrie Irving, which they're not going to get from Kevin Love or anybody else on the roster. So I'm not using that as a precedent here, the reason I say that goes back to one of the very first questions you asked me. I think that Cleveland is going to be desperate enough that they can keep up with a full throttle Golden State team in the first half.
Right.
And then if Cleveland stays full throttle and Golden State starts to realize, well, we should just hang back a little bit and chill, that's when you start to feel really good about Cleveland's chances. I am just legitimately worried that as good as Cleveland can play in the first half, Golden State could get out to a 12-13 point lead by halftime just because they are not letting up and they're not slowing down. So I'm tempted to give Cleveland credit here and give them a win, but I got to go with my gut, which is that Golden State closes it out in pretty convincing fashion.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I think as much as we'd like to see a gentleman sweep and not see LeBron get swept for the second time in his career in the finals, I hate to even say that out loud for one of the greatest players in the history of the game, but it does happen. You know, it happened to Magic Johnson. It happened to Isaiah Thomas. It happens to some people. So even Shaq that you mentioned, he lost in four games to the Rockets back when he was with the Magic. It happens to some of the all-time greats. So don't worry about it too much, LeBron, if it does happen to you, but I do think that's what's going to happen. Golden State's going to win on Friday, and this series will be over before Saturday morning. Which, you know, as great of a gifted athlete as LeBron is, there's somebody else that I feel like this has happened to before, and at the risk of turning this show into something resembling Bryant and Casey comment on the literary works of other geniuses, which is what we can keep doing lately, I read an article on The Ringer that I don't know if you got a chance to read, but it was basically an article calling out that LeBron does compare to one of the all-time greats in basketball, but it might not be who you think. So let me describe this gentleman to you, and you tell me who you think that is. So, also a freak of nature, gifted athlete, ridiculous scorer, ridiculous rebounder, ridiculous with assists, ridiculous with blocks, steals, you name it. Anything that you needed this guy to do, he could do. He unfortunately was playing on a lot of teams that were not very stacked with talent. He went only 2-4 in the finals, won 4 MVPs, won 2 finals MVPs, but lost 4 times to his arch rival. And I think we're seeing that same thing with LeBron and the Golden State Warriors, which is kind of an interesting parallel here. So who do you think I'm describing there? What player comes to mind when you hear that?
You know, to me, it sounds an awful lot like you're describing Andre the Giant.
Well, yeah.
Maybe specifically his character from The Princess Bride. first thing that pops into mind.
He didn't necessarily win that battle, but he won in the long haul. I mean, he was a happier guy because of the defeat.
That's true. You're right. He
became a better person. So the other thing I wanted to use to describe this guy is he wasn't necessarily the consummate teammate and didn't necessarily have coaches that he would listen to. And these weren't also even the greatest coaches, which could have been part of the problem. And he had guys that wouldn't want to play with him very long because they felt burnt out by his need to be the guy holding the ball all the time. But he also felt like he needed to hold the ball all the time because his opponents wouldn't score. And I'll give you a key hint here. Even though this guy scored 100 points in a game, it still wasn't always enough to win. And he's one of the few people to score 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 points in a game. And there's only one that's done those last two, by the way. But he couldn't always win championships, which is nuts given that he was 7'2" and, generally speaking, the first giant of the game. I'm assuming you know who that is at this point. It's Wilt Chamberlain.
7'2", I was thinking Danny DeVito, but yeah. Now I'm thinking Wilt Chamberlain for sure.
Hi, you know, there's guys that are just tall on the screen, and there's some guys that are just tall in person, and DeVito's, he does both, you know? He doesn't come off as short as you think he is, but so Wilt is still, you look at his not just his finals resume, but his NBA career resume, and the guy was just thwarted by Bill Russell over and over, the Celtics over and over. He played for 3 different franchises. LeBron's only played for 2, but technically you could count the second Cleveland trip as a 3rd franchise. And it's just crazy that as much as we compare LeBron to Jordan, or even in some cases I've compared to Magic, I know other people have as well. Maybe we've got it wrong. Maybe he's a freaky nature like Wilt and just doesn't know when to hand the baton over to someone else. And has all these individual achievements, but just struggles to get his team over the hump. And sometimes that's supporting cast. Other times it's because he is kind of a by nature selfish player, because let's face it, he's the best basketball player on the planet right now. I wouldn't know who to pass to either if I were him, and he still passes an awful lot. Does that comparison make sense to you, or do you think that's way out of this world, not even close?
That's it, person for sure. And I must admit, it's not one that I had ever thought of, because we have a tendency, media members and as just people with general human nature, to compare look alike and play alike and physical attributes, and we don't always look at the stats or the impact or the legacy. And so, you know, for me, just like you said, it's been, but sort of the secondary comparisons that I've thought of were, you know, Oscar Robertson or Julius Erving.
Right.
Because in ways they had similar bodies or similar playing types. So thought of Wilt before, and to an extent, a little bit of a stretch, there's a validity to that. You mentioned the issue. LeBron has never, ever been known as a bad teammate on the court, but he's been known to throw guys under the bus. And even when he tries to rally these oddball things that they do for chemistry, like buy suits before playoff games, oftentimes that's aided by some of the drama that comes with being around him. Right. And so even that aspect, I think, like I said, is something I'd never thought of, but I think there's something to it. If not a whole lot, definitely something.
Well, I think at the end of the day, we're going to look back and remember LeBron as somebody we were truly grateful to be able to watch in his prime, on TV, in games, whatever you have. But at the end of the day, when he retires, I think we'll also remember him as someone like Will or like Magic, where maybe they weren't the greatest player of all time, and that's not really fair to them because they didn't have the greatest supporting cast like Jordan did. But he's still damn good, and I don't think I want to take anything away from what he's doing now. I mean, I know he's tired, and his knees are tired, and his eye looks really tired, but sometimes you get poked in the eye by Draymond Green, and sometimes you lose the finals, but that doesn't mean that you're not an amazing player. And I just feel like we say that a lot, but you just can't say it enough, that the guy simply does things that shouldn't be possible, and I'm grateful to be able to watch him play basketball.
I'm right there with you. I think that he is, in a lot of ways, disrespecting people. Say that he'll never be Jordan because of his championship losses and whatnot. But again, like you said, I think there's also some, one thing that I will say is clearly the greatest thing he could have done for his legacy and his image was come back to Cleveland.
Right.
He did that. That was a, what I'm going to have a little bit of a hot take here, probably an unpopular opinion, I think that day when it's all said and done, maybe not right now in the moment, but when it's all said and done, the Golden State Warriors team edition is actually going to see, because he didn't and go play for a team that was already a champion. Right. He beat greatest regular season team of all time in a final. I think that when we're outside of the moment, many, many years from now, we're going to lose. And through that team that constructs sort of the LeBron antidote, and they really pushed him, and the fact that he found that stretch at all is really important and big for his legacy.
Yeah, I think we'll really look back on that fondly, and I think it'll be the similar to the way Russell pushed Chamberlain, and that if it weren't for Russell and the Celtics, who knows how many titles Chamberlain would have won. And seeing him push to the brink like that only made him a better player. And it's definitely done the same for LeBron to have this seemingly unbeatable team come at him. And he still, night after night, is able to put up a good challenge. And even though this series is lopsided at 3-0, there's been three really good games that I don't think anybody anticipated being this close. So my hat's off to him. I would love to say and the Cavs, but we know my hat's off to him. I can't give credit where credit's not due. So It's just been fun to watch, and I hope wherever he ends up next year, he has a much better chance at a title than he seems to this year, which is pretty scary saying about somebody who's been in the finals four times in a row for one team, and then, you know, eight overall in the last 8 years. That's crazy. Just saying that out loud sounds nuts.
Yeah, it really is. And this too, I think, backing off what you said here quickly, is I think can you like, not necessarily to the Cavs, but I think that if and probably when he chooses to go somewhere, it's wants the burden of being the only guy on the court,
right?
But he wants the burden of playing joyless basketball, to go not having fun. He's having a difficult time, you know, bonding with these young guys brought in, such as special basketball mind, probably ad nauseum. I don't think to play so joyless. I think he wants to have some fun in the twilight of his career.
Yeah, and I think he deserves to. He's worked so hard for so many years and put so many miles on his knees that I think it'd be nice to see him go somewhere where he didn't have to be the focal point and can just enjoy playing basketball for a year or two and hang it up with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
So we're over the 30-minute mark. We promised you guys a quick show, so we're going to sign off, but we appreciate you checking us out. Two times in 1 week, it's crazy. I think that's only happened once before, and that's... We hope it'll happen again. You know, we kind of went a roundabout way from what we set out to do, but dang it, we did it, and they can't take that away from us. We're like an NBA champion. Once the banner's up, you can't take it back down. So unless you blow up the stadium and build a new one, and then you have to take it down. But that's a different story. So, Bryant, thanks again for being on, and hope you have a good weekend. And I hope, really hope, that somehow the Warriors hand the Cavs the gift of a win so we get at least Game 5. Maybe even Game 6 if we're that lucky. That'd be great for the Cavs to get a steal of a win in Game 3 and then somehow win the next two and make this a series. That will never happen, but a man can dream. But thanks again, Bryant, and we will check you guys out again next week. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm Casey Mabbitt. He's Bryant Knox, at Bryant Knox, at Oregon Sports Guy on Twitter. Thanks again. You guys have a good weekend. See you next week.